Hey everyone, welcome back to Wake Up with Jenny and Friends. Now, before we get into the best episode you've ever heard in your entire life, I just want to give a quick shout out to our episode sponsor today, Monkey Knuckles. If you're anything like me and you like to keep your kung fu, kick-ass, smack-a-bitch for a bowl of noodles monkey energy low-key, while still maintaining a cool, calm, and approachable demeanor on the outside, then Monkey Knuckles is definitely the safety accessory you want to have on your person. You know, because sometimes you decide that grocery prices are just way too high, so you venture down some questionable back alleys looking for some less questionable but slightly used produce. And that's when you come across Bill's Bells, Peppers that is. And sure, his prices are reasonable, but then you spot the only cucumber left, and before you can extend your hand to claim ownership of said cucumber, an ornery old lady who we'll call Susan snatches it out from under you. Now, on most days, a quick meditative breath would have saved you and Susan both, but today is not that day. No, today is a different day. Today, you're wearing your monkey knuckles. What I'm getting at is that sometimes violence is an option. Monkey knuckles are not only legal for use in Canada, but they're also made of lightweight material and come with a lifetime warranty. So if you should ever find yourself in a cucumber standoff with a group of seniors and a guy named Bill, who I'm pretty sure also sells crack under the codename Green Beans, you're going to want to have a set of monkey knuckles on you. Go check them out. They're at www.monkeyknuckles.ca and use code JENNYS10 for 10% off. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining me again. I appreciate you being here. I have a very special guest with me today, Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much.
This is incredible. I'm going to try not to cry like a little bitch for a second here, because this is such an honor to have you on the show and to talk with you about so many different things that we're going to talk about today. But I have to say right off the bat, this is just an incredible moment for me. As a kid growing up, the only happy memories I ever had were spent with my grandparents on the weekends, and my papa was a huge, huge wrestling fan. So we would watch the matches on the Saturdays and the Sundays, and just seeing you and watching you is just such a big part of my growing up. And so it's truly an honor to speak with you, and such an important message that you have to share. And so I'm really blessed, and thank you very much for being here.
I get fuzzy feelings. I love hearing interactions with your grandparents and stuff. And I know it brings a warm feeling to your heart too. So,
yeah, he would be very. Anytime I did anything really, really well, he would always. He wasn't a big giver of compliments. He was one of those real manly men, guy's guy, strong, tight lipped. But if I ever did anything really, really good, he'd just give me a look and say, "You done good, kid." So I think he'd probably be saying that today.
I hope so.
And I want to talk a little bit about wrestling to start, if we could. And you've put out some really great documentaries lately. And if people haven't seen them, I really encourage you to go see them. You've got quite a few. There's, you know, Resurrection of Jake the Snake, which is on different platforms, that really focuses on your recovery and your time with Dallas. Most recently, you did the one with A&E, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, I was very, very happy with the way that turned out.
It was really, really good. And I thought it covered so much of your life and all the things you've been through, and really encompassed your connection with your family too, which was really great.
It did. It was, it wasn't easy doing it because I had to relive a bunch of stuff. But, you know, the whole reason I did these things was to let others know out there that they're not the only ones, you know. That there's a lot of people that suffer with these things, and we just need to get it out there to let them know that, hey, it's okay that she went through that, but there is hope.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It comes from inside.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I found interesting right at the very beginning that I didn't know until I watched the documentary was that you didn't really start out having a super keen interest in wrestling to begin with. You wanted to be an architect.
Yeah, I did not want to be. I hated wrestling because I thought wrestling was what kept my father away from me, which that wasn't true at all.
So it was something that you kind of shied away from. You didn't want to.
I didn't want any part of it at all.
Any part of it. No. What drew you to the architecture?
I've always been fascinated with buildings. I love looking at buildings. I love architecture. I know I went over to Europe and spent 4 years over there just looking around.
Oh, wow.
All the different stuff and just amazed at how long the buildings over there have been standing, you know? I mean, our country is basically a baby when it comes to being a country.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only been around 1,000 or so years. And, you know, you look at what they have over there, you know, we're not even 1,000 years old yet. And you look at stuff over there that's thousands and thousands of years old and still working, you know. I mean, for instance, the sewer system in London was built by the Romans. And it still works.
Yeah.
Christ, man. I mean, one of my favorite restaurants in England was built in the year 1200.
Oh, wow. What restaurant is that?
I can't remember the name of it. But it was an old gin mill.
Oh, wow.
They ground wheat and flour up. They ground wheat up to make flour in. And it was just a massive building. And it goes beyond description. I mean, I even went to the oldest pub in England. What year do you think that was opened?
Oh my gosh, I can't even remember. Probably when Jesus was a baby.
Yeah, 700.
700. I was going to say 900, so I was a little, yeah, 700. Wow.
Yeah. I think some of the same waitresses still work there.
Probably making better tips now, though.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do you get the feeling? Does it feel different when you walk into places like that? Like, do you feel the history there? You feel like an energy.
Yeah, you feel it definitely.
Yeah,
just around you feel it. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, going to places like the Verallium, you know, and London Colney. And it's just incredible that back then they did things that we're doing now and calling it new. It wasn't right. New 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, they're crying out loud, you know, I mean, heated football fields, which they weren't used for football back then. They were camps to keep the ground warm. Because soldiers were getting sick from the wet, damp weather in England. So they built these massive furnaces underground and it heated all the ground. And I just find that just blows me away.
It feels ingenious because they also had kind of limited resources back then compared to what we have now.
No electric drills.
Yeah, there was no DeWalt on set.
No, sure as hell wasn't, man. And you know, you go to some of the cathedrals that took 300 and 400 years to build. That's just amazing. You know, it took 400 years to complete this cathedral, and during that time, the English had lost and lost the Romans and. The English came back and won it back, and then the Nords came in, and the Nords took over, and they worked on it too. I mean, all these different factions came in and worked on this beautiful piece of art, and it still stands.
Yeah, isn't that a testament to the craftsmanship? Like, I don't like my papa was a mason.
Yes,
and he was also a very, very skilled carpenter. He used to build houses and all kinds of things, and yeah, and he really they don't make stuff like they used to. That saying is true.
They don't, and Now today we build it fast and cheap. Whereas
like most of my relationships. Yeah.
Yeah. Here.
I'm just kidding. But when you started getting into wrestling, how did you what veered you off from the architecture and towards wrestling? What was that moment for you?
I wanted to make my father love me. I wanted my father to say he was proud of me. I wanted his respect. But more than anything, I wanted to hear him say, "I'm proud of you, son." He never did. Never did. He would tell other people he was proud of me, but he wouldn't tell me.
Do you think that would have made a difference in the trajectory of your life back then, thinking about it now as an adult?
Yes, it would have.
Yeah.
I don't think grounded out the way I did. You know, I didn't get into wrestling the right way. I did the trial and error method. Not good.
Were you, if there's a hard path and an easy path, you took the hard path?
Hardest path you could.
Yeah.
And the dumbest could.
And it's no light venture to get into wrestling. Like, there's a lot of training involved.
Yeah, and I skipped all that and went right into wrestling.
You just jumped into the ring and started throwing punches.
Yeah.
What?
Boy, messed up.
What kind of training, like when you jumped in there without having done the prior training and that, and then you got in there, did you think for a second like, oh shit, what did I get myself into? Or were you just like, let's go full 100?
No, as soon as I got in there, I felt lost. I was lost.
Yeah. And was there people around to help you, or did you think like, okay, I got to get my shit together. I got to start training. I got to, cause it's so physical.
Yeah. I just went for it.
Just went for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cause some people are hardcore in the training. They're trained, it's their whole life, train every day, hours a day. Like, where did you sit in that kind of?
Well, I trained every day. But I wasn't training the right way. I wasn't having someone teach me these moves. I was just learning them by error, you know, and again, it cost me many injuries.
Yeah, what are some of the injuries that you've...
I had to have my wrist reconstructed. That took a year and a half. That was a bad injury.
Yeah.
I folded this to here.
Oof.
It shouldn't go to here.
Yeah, it doesn't bend that way.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, no. Were you still able to give the middle finger, though, when you were driving? Were you still?
I had the spare, though.
That's all that matters. As long as you got one in the back pocket.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Because it's really about, would you say it's a lot of technique involved in the wrestling more so?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, everybody can do a certain move, but it's the spin that you put on that move that makes it yours.
Absolutely. And then you came up with your own signature move.
Yeah, the DDT.
The DDT. And how did you, how what was the genesis of that?
That was by accident. I had a guy in a front face lock, and he went to push me into the corner, drive me into the corner, and he stepped on my foot, which caused us both to go to the floor, you know, to go down. When he went down, his head hit, and that was that. And I didn't really realize how devastating it was or how devastating it looked, but the fans told me how it looked. They just went, oh, you know, oh my God, what was that? I jumped to my feet going, I don't know what I just did, but man, I was cool, you know.
Yeah. You just want to replicate that.
Yeah, I did. I started working at it and figuring it out, and I figured it out pretty quick.
Yeah. How'd you come up with the name?
I picked up a newspaper one morning, and it was USA Today, and it said DDT banned from all farm usage. And I'm like, DDT, and that sounds cool. I seen the word, and I realized why they made it DDT, because it was like 17 letters to a word. It was dichlorothymethylene subida, something like that. And so they called it DDT, and I just thought it had a nice ring to it.
Were there other names that you were thinking about before you saw that, or did you think about naming it before, or just the...
That was it.
that was it?
That was it.
Yeah. And then you brought in this character of the, so one of the things that was always like fascinating for me as a kid watching it with my papa was that it was always the wonderment of wrestling. Like, oh, is it real, Papa? Is it a show or is it real? And he would never tell me, right? He would always just keep that excitement, that guessing alive, like, oh my God, he just broke the guy's neck. Is that real? You know, and it was that excitement and that. And then the involvement of characters, like each person in the ring, inside and outside of the ring, had this persona, this character. And then everybody was known by their character. How did you create this, the Jake, the snake, like involve the snake in that whole bit? Like, what was that for you?
I was Jake the Snake before I ever carried the snake. I wrestled as Jake Roberts for years before I ever carried the snake. But I think that was from my dark side, being a snake, being quiet but deadly. I was, believe it or not, I was very shy growing up. As most kids are that come from abuse homes. We're very quiet and shy and non-trusting, The Jake the Snake character was just a spin-off of who I grew up as. And always on the side, not in the middle of the floor, lurking, looking for a way out.
Is that alter ego persona? That's the contrast of it's such a dichotomy of, from being the vulnerable, you know, shy kid, and then having all this anger and you know, feeling inside of you. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I can definitely resonate with that for sure. And I think it's one of the things about you being so vocal and open about your past and your issues and your story and your journey is that a lot more people can relate to it. And a lot of people, especially men, because you know, you're talking about growing up in an abusive situation. And it's, I think you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think for men, it's harder sometimes to talk about that thing because we always think of sort of women being abused in that situation, but we don't think of men being in that situation.
No, it's true. I remember as a young teenager, I finally decided I was going to tell somebody what was going on. So I told my best friend. Well, my best friend, he just thought it was so cool that I was having sex, with my stepmother, because she was really hot, No, it's not fun, man. He's like, how can it not be fun? Sex is great, man. You're so lucky. I'm like, no, I'm not lucky, man. It's not fun when you're being forced into a situation and being beaten afterwards and name called and everything. And then you can't dare tell anybody, and you're wearing long sleeve shirts in the summer times to cover up the markings that have been left, from belts and what have you. And hairbrushes and clothes wires, and that was a favorite. Good old clothes hangers.
Mommy dearest
Yeah.
syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so did wrestling end up being kind of a little bit of an escape for you almost? And yeah.
I could hide in plain sight, you know.
Absolutely.
That's what I did. And I had the snake around me to defer people. So,
right.
Chances are, if you carry a snake around your neck, people aren't going to talk to you about you. They're going to talk about what's hanging around your neck. You
Absolutely.
Know? And that's what the snake was for.
Almost a protection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. But were you afraid of the snake
yeah.
at first? Were you, yeah.
Yeah, I am.
You still are.
Yes, I'm terrified of snakes.
But you would never have known. You pulled it off so well. Like, you carried it so well. Like, it was an extension of you.
I know. It's funny how that worked. I would be in the locker room, and then when the bell rang, all of a sudden I would just flip.
Yeah.
Was no longer a really Ed Smith. I was Jake the Snake, and Jake the Snake's not fucking afraid of anything.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Incredible how our brains do that for us, eh? Our brains are so plastic that we can sort of expand into these mindsets that we can become a different person, and sort of wrestling gave you that license to be that bad guy out in the open.
Absolutely.
Yeah, incredible. Were there any ever issues with the snake at all? Did you ever have any?
Oh, yeah. They would destroy the bathrooms.
Oh, no.
You know, I had to do something with it, you know, so I would get to my hotel room and get it out, and I'd put it in the bathroom, you know, put some water in the bathtub and let it play or whatever it does. And, the next morning, I'd come in there, and the shower curtain would be broken. I had one break a sink off the wall.
Oh, no way.
I had one break the toilet loose from the floor. Water was going everywhere. You know, I mean, you know, you call downstairs and say, yeah, I've got a leakage problem up here. My snake broke the toilet. Yeah, funny guy, right? Funny guy, ha-ha.
Oh my God. And they didn't give you, they had left the snake up to you, to your, for you to
yeah.
watch. They no one,
yeah.
There wasn't like a snake handler or like
nope.
A,
nope.
Nothing. If it fits, it ships. That is insane.
I had to deal with it 24/7.
No way. Oh my gosh.
And, you know, not many people knew that it wasn't the same snake.
Oh, okay.
Because the snake couldn't handle the flying. Snakes get pneumonia really easily.
Oh, okay.
And flying did that for him. So I would have the same snake for about 7 to 10 days, and then I would have to trade snakes. And then I wouldn't see the one I just traded for probably 6 to 10 months before I'd see it again.
So snakes on a plane was just a fucking lie then.
Yeah, horseshit.
And did I heard something, I'm not sure if it was on one of the documentaries or an interview you did, but did they replace the teeth, the fangs in the snake?
No. No, the only thing they did for the cobra was remove the venom sacs.
But the teeth were still.
Yeah, the fangs and teeth were there.
So every bite was an actual.
Yeah. But you know, cobra doesn't have fangs, it has teeth. It feels like a fish's mouth. Very spiny teeth. Whereas a python has these really long fangs. You know, they can be 3-4 inches long. And those things hurt. Really hurt.
Were you ever bitten by
it? Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yes, many times. Many times.
Oh, my God. What does that feel like?
It felt like hell. And, of course, the worst thing you can do is jerk away when you get bit.
I guess because it tears
happens
it.
Is it, yeah, it tears it. So you jerk away, and now you've got a massive, you know, gash in your arm, and blood's going everywhere, and you got to fix that. Yeah, not good.
Oh my gosh, that's insane. You just walk around the clubs and you just like, you should see the other guy.
Yeah, right.
Oh my.
Nuts, nuts.
Oh my gosh, brutal. And then do you have to, so are you responsible for everything with the snake too? Like, did you have to feed it and everything? And
No, you don't feed them very often.
You
Only
don't feed
once
them.
every 6 weeks. So I never fed them on the road, because once you feed them, they get very, very hard to handle, because they got this large lump in them. And of course, you try to handle that lump in there, and it hurts them. And when they get hurt, chew.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Was there ever any like incidents in the ring that you thought were like, oh shit, this is not good? Like,
And I had one bite Andre, and broke two fangs off in his shoulder. I got bitten several times in the ring. And then probably the most famous one was whenever the King Cobra bit Macho Man.
Macho Man,
You
yes,
know,
I
and
remember that.
he chewed on Macho Man for about, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds.
Oof.
Just chewing on his arm, you know, and shaking his head and chewing. I loved watching it, but
It's like
I
a
was,
pit bull.
yeah, I was quite happy watching that snake chew on Macho Man.
Your rivalry there. Yeah. What was it like working with Andre?
Well, it was great. You know, he was such a massive man, but a great, great performer. A really great performer. You know, we started that whole thing out. He supposedly passed out over the fear of the snake, you know, and he passes out. Well, that's bullshit. That man wasn't afraid of anything.
Yeah. Incredible. He must have been, he was like over 7 feet.
Yeah, 7'5".
Brutal.
7'5" and 500 pounds.
500 pounds.
Yep.
Holy smack. That's crazy. Accommodations would have been super challenging, eh?
Yeah.
What was your favorite match of all
There's
time? So many.
Matches, yeah. I mean, I wrestled Ronnie Garvin a lot back in the earlier days, and those were great. Ricky Steamboat, of course, was awesome. Ted DiBiase was awesome. Macho Man was great.
Yeah.
So I've been very fortunate to wrestle some of the greatest talent ever to step into the ring.
Yeah.
And quite happy to do so.
And I think the one thing for me that I noticed too that set you apart, which I really loved, is like when you would go in and you do those interviews, but usually all the wrestlers would come in and they'd be yelling and screaming and I'm gonna get to you and we're gonna have the biggest match, blah, blah, blah. And it'd be all this, you know, intimidation, you know, the louder the badder the better, though. And you came in there so calm and so suave and so collected with this deep, deep voice. And it's like, when you spoke, it was like, okay, we better listen up.
Yeah. Well, that was by very early in my career. I was wrestling, and a guy dropped a knee in my throat and it crushed my voice box. So I can't yell or scream. This is about as loud as it gets.
Even to today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It will go.
Do you think you would have done that anyways? You would have taken that approach anyways? Had that not happened?
Probably. I would have probably went with, because I know how bad I hated somebody screaming at me. So
yeah,
it just made sense. Be quiet, be stoic almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Total different vibe too, which is
Yeah, I like playing mind games with people. So
that's part of it, right? It's acting, right? It's part of like that manipulation of the audience, of the feeling of drawing people in. It's, you know, and you did that so well.
Yeah, I always jokingly said it's masturbating people's emotions. High, the low, you know, and you play with them and you bring them back up and then you make them sit. And you take them for a ride.
Yeah, 100%. Do you think you would have been an actor or anything like that had you not got, I know you've done some movies and stuff like that, but do you think you would have gone into that had you not gone into wrestling?
I don't know. I really don't know. I enjoy doing the acting, but, architecture still gets me. I build furniture.
Oh, you do?
Part, you know, I don't do as much of it as I wish I could. I don't know.
What kind of things do you build?
Oh, everything from gun cabinets to china hutches to crossbows, even.
Oh, wow.
Weapons. Living room furniture, you know, kitchen, dining room, whatever, bedroom furniture. I've built.
Oh, that's amazing. That takes such a skill. You just self-taught?
No, I learned it in high school.
Yeah. And just carried on from there. Oh.
Yeah.
Man, that's incredible. So if you didn't have the snake, you would have maybe come out with some hammers or something like that.
Probably. Yeah.
Some of my favorite matches were watching you with Macho Man and Rick Rude, and like there was a replay the other day. Rick Rude was mouthing off to Cheryl, and she smacks him, and then out you come, and it's like, ah! this was incredible.
They understand that, you know. They understand the anger that I would have. They can understand how she would feel. So it's something that's very close to home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we start thinking of these ideas to build a, my brain just went flop.
Oh, that's okay. We're talking about different matches and talking about the feelings behind them.
How to create rivalries.
Yeah.
And the way you recreate a rivalry is by doing something that's personal. You know, it's in your face, and people can understand that, how a man would react if this woman was approached, and how she might react too.
Did the company ever set that stuff up without you knowing? Like, did they ever set up a storyline without you knowing, just to evoke that feeling? No.
No.
So everything was already like
very dangerous.
Right. Yeah. Especially at that time, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. If it wasn't set up and this guy's out there messing with my wife, I think I'd take that pretty personally. And my reaction would have been much stronger.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How does it work? Like when you go into a match and you know you've got matches coming up and you know you've got shows coming up, is there sort of an outline of how the industry works? Of like, okay, this is the storyline we're going to go with. Do they ask for your input? Do they get you guys to put together? Like, how does that kind of process work?
Well, they just come to you and say, we've got this idea. What do you guys think? You know, and then we take it from there.
Yeah.
Then build on it.
Yeah.
You know, and subtract and come up with that good number at the end.
It's sort of like putting together a play almost.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Any matches that you ever had that you regretted or that you felt like you could have been given a do-over for?
No. The only match I would have been very unhappy with was myself and Vader.
Mm.
The only reason being is he hurt me twice, the same injury. He broke my.
Oh shit, your sternum.
Yeah. Yeah, twice he broke it in the span of months.
Holy shit.
The reason being is he said he just got so excited because the people were so into it that it just amped him up so much and he just couldn't control his energy. Oh, really? Well, how about this? Because I don't want to be in the ring with somebody that can't control their energy.
Yeah.
You know, very dangerous.
Yeah, there is that element of danger too, because you have to, like you said, it's a skill and there's a technique involved in wrestling, but is there also the response, feel like you have a responsibility to your partner that you're with in the ring.
Not to hurt them.
Yeah.
Your biggest responsibility should be not to hurt my opponent.
Yeah. And is that sort of like a do no harm, like an unwritten rule or a written rule in the industry?
Yeah, it's unwritten, but it's the rule.
Number one rule.
Yeah, I've got about 10 more minutes for you, if that's all right.
Okay, sounds good. Well, let's touch on a little bit of the addiction piece too, because I think that's going to be super helpful for our audience. And
sure.
One thing that the resurrection of Jake the Snake really touched on was your struggle with addiction and alcohol, and you overcoming that. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, because you are now clean and sober on the other side of it for over 10 years now.
Yeah, over 10 years.
Yeah. And so what was that point for you where you're like, okay, this is not a life that I want to live. This is not working for me.
It was almost too late.
Mm.
I'd already given up.
Yeah.
I'd given up and, I knew I was going to die. I just didn't know when. But at times I would almost try to die.
Mm.
Overdoing the drugs or overdoing the alcohol. Hoping that it would do it. And it didn't. And along came an old friend. And gave me an opportunity to try to get clean and sober.
Yeah.
And his idea was to put this film together of showing me coming out the other side, which a very happy situation. It wasn't something that was to be easy. It was very hard. There was a lot of precautions taken. There was a lot of people involved, not only Dallas, but people that had, I called them bugs, like you bug a room.
Yeah.
So their job was to keep an eye on me and make sure I didn't use,
Yeah.
For instance, if I had to go to work, I had to hire somebody to come with me. What?
Yeah. You know, a chaperone.
Yeah. I'm going to pay how much?
Yeah.
Holy shit, why am I even going to work, Because there were times that, I didn't make near as much as I should have because I had to give somebody else $400 or $500, plus their airfare.
Right.
So that wound up being very expensive. But all these things had to be put into place. So there was always somebody with me. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere by myself. Mm. Nowhere.
And do you think that was part of your success that you had in getting sober? That those meetings and having those people with you?
I couldn't go anywhere by myself. One of the first things I did whenever I started getting sober was cut up my driver's license.
Okay.
I knew if I could get a hold of a car and I could take off on my own, good things aren't going to happen.
Yeah.
It will be bad.
And now you're on the other side of that and you have such a beautiful life. Did you ever think, being in the position you were 10, 12, 15 years ago, that you'd have all of this now?
Hell no. Hell no.
Yeah.
I find the success that I'm getting now is even more than I got back in my heyday, financially.
Mm-hmm.
the emotional rewards that I've gotten, you know, being able to develop some relationships that were dead and done with children, with my ex-wife. We're now very happy together.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, you know, we all have our days.
She's giving you the eye there.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's fucking with me.
And hey, Cheryl, hey, how are you? And you have such a wonderful relationship with your kids now. I've had the opportunity to correspond with Brandy, and she is just a sweetheart. She's a gem.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
She's a flower.
Yeah, absolutely. She's so sweet. Aw.
Yeah.
And you're the best grandpa ever, I hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Papa Jake.
Papa Jake.
Crazy, crazy grandpa.
Well, for our viewers who are listening who might be struggling a little bit and on the fence of, you know, wondering if it's possible to even get out of the situation that they're in or get sober, get clean, it is possible. And what would you say to them if they're on the fence of trying to figure out what to do?
If you really want to get sober and clean, it's really simple. Stop drinking. Stop using. How do you do that? I know how hard it was to stop. Well, one of the things I did was start taking Anabuse,
mm-hmm.
which is a drug that if you drink on it, my friend, you will be very ill. You will have stuff flying out of your mouth and flying out your rear end at the same time. Not a pleasant trip, but it's one of the things that you have to do if you really want to get clean and sober. You got to stop these things. And one of the big things that you're going to have to do is get rid of those drinking buddies and get rid of those drugging buddies. You got to put yourself in a different place. If you're going to go out and you roll around with pigs, chances are you're going to smell like pig shit.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. You know, you got to find new friends, new places to go, and the Bible doesn't hurt.
Mm.
You know, a little God in your life doesn't hurt anybody. You know, but
Amen.
It's not easy. And the biggest thing I can tell you is never ever give up.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get clean and sober and you've got a week under your belt and you screw up, dust yourself off, get back up, and get back in the race. You know, you're only a failure if you fail, right?
Right.
The only way to fail is by stop trying.
Yeah.
That's the only way you fail.
Yeah.
Nobody tries to fail, but most people fail to try.
Absolutely.
Bottom line.
Absolutely. Well, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of motivation and a lot of strength to do what you've done. And, you know, if you can do it, anybody can do it, I think is a good message. And, you know, not only for yourself, but the love that you have for your family and your kids, for you to want to get clean speaks volumes. Yeah. And just as a person and as a fan and, you know, someone who's loved you since I was a kid, I'm so proud to see you doing so well in this stage. And, you know, if you ever wondered if you ever mattered to anyone, you do. And, you know,
sobriety also showed me that there are a lot of people out there that cared about me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it changes your mental health and well-being too.
It does.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've enjoyed being on the show. So
thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. Is there anything that you want to shout out or tell people where they can get your stuff or reach you?
Man, just go to my website, man, mm-hmm. and see what the show's at. I do comedy. That's true. I know for a fact that May 5th, I'm at Kowloon's in Saugus, Massachusetts. A few days later, I'm at the Hard Rock in Hartford. I'm also going to be at Oh gosh, I just forgot about the name of it.
Well, we'll list all the stuff, all your links on the show program too, on your website. People can go and get your memorabilia and they can get your stuff signed and whatever.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Awesome. And you also have a podcast too, which people
yes,
can
I did. The Snake Pit.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Hey, thank you so much, Jake, for being on the show. And thanks for being such an inspiration to so many people. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you, everybody. Bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into today's episode. I hope you loved it as much as I did. We love the feedback here on the show. So make sure you like, share, comment, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. I truly, truly appreciate it. And I love the engagement with each and every one of you. A quick couple of things before we end for today. I want to give you some information on what's happening with Jake, where you could reach him, all of his stuff that's going on. So a couple of things. First, his Instagram. You can check him out on Instagram at JakeTheSnakeDDT. You can also check him out on www.JakeTheSnakeShop.com for amazing memorabilia, some t-shirts, some collectibles, some signed items. So make sure you go ahead and go on that website and get your gear, get your memorabilia, get your Jake the Snake items. And some of them, like I said, are signed too. So that's totally awesome. Jake also has a podcast himself, which is amazing. So make sure you check that out. That's The Snake Pit on Spotify and all podcast platforms. You can check Jake out at the Last Call Tour on Sunday, April 30th in Pittsburgh, and stay connected to Jake for all of his upcoming events. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.